Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:16 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is December 16th. I thought we'd kick off again today with the UK. The FTSE 250 was up again and reclaimed its peak from Friday. And this is a really quite impressive breakout. That's despite the fact that we have a short-term overbought condition. But we can also see that from the consistency of what is not an especially consistent chart is that this index is prone to these lengthy consolidations. And the most recent of these, where the peak was back in 2017, failed upside break in 2018, now breaking out at the end of 2019, was a pretty lengthy one compared to the other consolidations that we've had. The only one that was anything like it was the one back in 2011 and 12. What it does suggest is that on each of the occasions when these indices have broken on the upside, when this index has broken on the upside, it has tacked on quite an impressive advance before we get the next period of volatility. Volatility might be considered to go with the territory when you're talking about mid-cap shares, but what it also suggests is that you've got the base effect, and they do have the potential to be more volatile on the upside as well as on the downside. The FTSE 350, which includes the FTSE 100, really does look almost exactly like the FTSE 100 because of the influence of those very large cap shares. And that was also in positive territory in here today and pushing up and away from this little short-term range that's persisted for the last few months. The pound, meanwhile, was relatively quiet compared to the fireworks that we saw on Friday, and finishing out the day pretty much unchanged. Considering just how much the pound has gone up in just a short period of time, I think it is quite likely we're going to get some consolidation, but I think it is quite unlikely that we're going to see it pull back below the trend mean. A significant risk premium is being priced out of the UK market that has contributed to the pop on the upside for the pound, and I think it's contributing to the return to outperformance for UK assets generally. I think it's also really quite interesting here that the Europe Stoxx 600 has now finally broken successfully above the 400 point level and is pulling away from it. When we look at this over the last 20 years, it's been ranging pretty much below the 400 point level now for 19 years, and it is now finally breaking on the upside. And the UK represents a really quite sizable chunk of this index. So when we then look at the Euro Stoxx index, well, then it's still quite a way below its all-time peak. But nevertheless, it is pushing on the upside. So there is clear scope here that both the UK and Europe generally are going to play catch-up. Well, it's not before time. They have been, I think, sidelined in the eyes of many investors for the last few years because of worries about the trade war and what that was doing to the business models of Europe's sizable export sector. There was uncertainty about what Brexit was going to mean. And of course, it's not as if individual European countries or mainland European countries have been bereft of uncertainty either. With the rise of populist movements in a sizable number of countries, with the Catalan independence movement in Spain, with the Five-Star movement and Lega Nordia, or the League in Italy, gaining power and forming an unlikely alliance that has so far at least continued to exist. And then, of course, the rise of the far right in Germany. Well, all of these factors against a background where the ECB has been doing what it can in order to try and stimulate growth and to depress the euro, but because of the fiscal constraints of the EU, then that has contributed to a slow pace of economic recovery. Well, at least we now have at least some visibility on Brexit, and with the trade war coming to at least a hiatus, then there is the scope here for Europe to begin to start to play catch-up. I think it's worth looking at the outlook for the S&P 500 on a similar basis. It's been outperforming for a considerable period already, having broken higher in early 2013. And during that time, we've seen three really quite lengthy consolidations, each of which has pulled back to the region of the 1,000-day moving average. What I am, in fact, starting to see now, though, is increasing commentary to that effect. And this is what we see in major bull markets, that it is when investors start to really have knowledge of the consistency of the trend. When we look at this trend, we can clearly see that in 3-year intervals, the index does tend to pull back in a somewhat violent manner, and that progresses for a while, and subsequently we get a pop on the upside, and these periods of trending activity tend to be really very persistent. But at the same time, we can also look at the valuation on the market, and just on an historic PE basis, it's at 21. And by any measure, that's not cheap. It might not necessarily be the most expensive that we've ever seen in history, but it's not cheap. Well, then when we think about some of the other markets, well, the Nikkei, for example, has been, I need to change that to local currency, has been ranging now above the 20,000 level, but it did break out in 2017, and this looks like a first step above the base. This is another market that has potential to play catch-up. It's interesting that both the Taiwanese market and the Japanese market both completed lengthy ranges in 2017. They also trended together during the 1980s. The fact that they're doing so once more is supportive of the view that we are back in a medium-term demand-dominated environment. They have responded first, probably because they had less in the way of constraints and headwinds on the political sphere than Europe has, but Europe does now appear to be playing catch-up, and Europe does have a lower valuation generally. When we think about what's going on in terms of the UK, well, the banking sector is starting to do better, and it was up in additional positive territory in here today, so that is positive. Then when we look at the Eurostoxx Banks Index, it is finding support in the region of the trend mean and confirming some support in the region of 80 and the region of the 2016 and 2012 lows. As long as it's holding the region of the trend mean, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to recovery. I think the big arbiter for a catch-up play in Europe is going to be the euro. It's been trending downwards for the last couple of years. It's right in the region of the trend mean. We have a higher reaction low, having bounced from the 110 area, but it has not yet been able to sustain a move back above this trend mean level. If we are, in fact, at least a pause in the trade war, and I suspect that this pause will at least persist through to the US election. The Federal Reserve has also pretty much said that they are not going to be raising rates within the next 12 months. The bond yield was up about 5 basis points in here today. It hasn't quite unwound the pullback that we saw on Friday, but the sequence of higher reaction lows since the peak in September is still really very evident. I think it is only a matter of time before we see it pushing back above the 2% level. I think when we think about what we can anticipate here, the fact that the commodity complex is also starting to perform in here. And it was up in a dynamic manner on Friday and pushed through on the upside in a dynamic manner again in here today. So people are beginning to consider that commodities can do well if we are in fact at the at a major pause at a minimum in the trade war, and that is likely to be beneficial to global growth. We also are seeing that its agricultural prices are starting to do better more than the industrial resources. The feeder cattle is steadying from the lower side of the range that's persisted for nearly 3 years. The coffee price has been resurgent on the upside. The sugar price is also starting to do better here. When we think about the individual grains, well, soybeans would be the obvious potential beneficiary of additional Chinese buying, and it is at least steadying from the low put in the third quarter. It hasn't quite yet been able to break up and out of this year-long base formation, but the prospects of that are certainly improving. Well, the one thing that is clear is that the world does not have enough pigs. Lean hog prices are still relatively well contained, not least because of the absence of Chinese buying. Now, the question is, will China start buying US hogs in the near term? But it is, I think, a more likely than not scenario. This rush to try and create a, or to try and find or create a pig that is immune to swine flu is a major endeavor. Genus apparently does have a breed of pigs that is immune to swine flu, but breeding them up to sufficient numbers is not a short-term endeavor. When we think about what are we seeing out there on the world stage, it's commodity price inflation. Copper prices remain quite firm and are pushing back up towards at least, I think, the $3 level, but it is at least back above the trend mean. Nickel prices had pulled back really very aggressively in the period to last week, but we're starting to see at least some evidence of the short-term oversold condition being unwound. Gold prices are still really very steady and continuing to hold the $1,450 area. And I think that is a standout, considering the lower risk premium that we're seeing as a result of trade war and Brexit news, the fact that gold remains really quite steady is supportive of the view that regardless of what the political outcome is going to be, there is going to be additional fiscal stimulus. And there is the additional point that the Federal Reserve is continuing to pump additional liquidity into the market. This is one of the few occasions that we've seen the Fed, the ECB, and the Bank of Japan all engaged in quantitative easing at the same time. And that's also against a background where we're getting fiscal stimulus. So this is a really quite impressive liquidity-rich environment, and the USA is running deficits in the region of $1 trillion. Well, that's generally a positive environment for gold, because when we're talking about this kind of stimulus and the quantity of money that is being lent into existence, well, that's the debasing of the currency. So the continued outperformance of stock markets is very strongly linked with the supply of liquidity. And if investors want any kind of hedge against that debasement of the currency, well, then gold is the obvious answer. And gold shares are also doing better and have at least steadied from the region of the trend mean. that this has been a 7-year base formation, and a sustained move above $30 would complete that base formation. So then I think it's also worth keeping an eye on the oil price. Oil prices are still steady around the region of the trend mean and closed above the $65 area on Friday, and at least held on to that advance in here today. There's been a sequence of lower rally highs since the end of 2018. There has been some resistance around $65 for the last 6 months. There has been a succession of higher reaction lows over the last 3 months. So there's a lot of levels in there, and it's been a volatile trading environment and really quite rangy over most of the last 2 years. I think the broader point is that the $60 area has held, and that had been an area of resistance between 2015 and 2017. The bigger point, though, is that $80 is probably going to be an important area of resistance. There is an awful lot of oil becomes economic around $80. Now the bigger, I think, when we think about all that's happening out there on the commodity front and renewed optimism about the outlook for commodities, well, now the question we have to ask is will oil play a part in that? Higher oil prices increase the cost of production of just about every other commodity. So if oil were to sit this resumption of interest in commodities out, that would be quite unusual. What that suggests is we're probably going to see some additional upside in the oil price. And then we also have to consider that bond yields are really very low, that wages continue to rise, that capacity utilization in a number of economies is reaching rather high levels. That, and then there is also the massive printing of money. All of that contributes to inflation. And inflation is something that nobody has been willing to talk about for years because of the complete absence of it, and nobody's been really pressured by it. I will certainly say that to maintain access to the same doctors that we had last year, my health insurance has gone up by 40% this year. And I suspect there are going to be a good number of people that are also experiencing that same phenomenon. So that's certainly something that we're seeing in the USA, at least, is that inflationary pressures are rising regardless of whether people are in fact, or it's whether that kind of detail is being reported. What we've also seen in here today is that there was a rather tepid kickoff to the holiday season in the USA this year. And I think that is being, that's quite evident in the performance of Amazon. It is still trading below its trend mean, and it really does need to sustain a move back above it. I can certainly also say that Mrs. Tracy's sales disappointed in September and in October, but were better in November and so far in December. What that suggests, perhaps, is that some of the worst is behind Amazon, that some of the delayed buying decisions that consumers were making were in anticipation of higher tariffs and of bigger spending decisions coming through with just rising costs of living. And with the end of the trade war, or at least an end to the trade war, that some of those decisions are being brought forward in terms of spending. Obviously, if Amazon were to break downwards from this range, it would be rather bad news from the perspective of monitoring the health of the US consumer. I think, though, when we look at some of the more speculative ventures out there, the renewed strength in Tesla, where it is up now and setting new closing highs the first time since 2017, that's a rather impressive performance. They are selling more electric vehicles than just about every other company combined. And one would have to question why one would go for another electric vehicle when one could have a Tesla. That is the conundrum that a number of the other automotive manufacturers have to come up with. I think when we think about the performance of a high yield share like Tesla, then it's being aided by the compression in high yield spreads, and this was a meaningful compression that we've seen over the last 2 weeks. There were obviously some worries back at the end of 2018 with the pop on the upside for high yield spreads, and the compression of that spread does suggest that we are back in a demand dominated environment. Now, I think it is also worth considering that if the dollar is in fact peaking, and that is not yet confirmed, that is positive for both European and other developed markets, but also emerging markets. And the continued performance of Brazil and additional risk taking that people are willing to consider there is really quite noteworthy. The failed break of the real below 420 is also meaningful, and it is now rapidly unwinding its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. In terms of exports to the USA, Mexico has been doing rather well, and the Mexican peso is now right in the region of its peaks for the year so far. This has been a triangular pattern. If it can break at and it is now below its trend mean, but if the dollar breaks downwards, then that is likely to be positive for the Mexican market. And the Mexbol index was up in a rather dynamic manner last week, so there is certainly scope for Mexico to benefit from the new NAFTA agreement, but also from the end of the trade war. Then what's going on in China is a rather interesting question. The A-share index is steady here around the 3,000 point level. And I think more than a few people must be thinking about Hong Kong and what exactly is going to happen there next. There is blood in the streets, so therefore we have to ask whether it is worth buying. The valuation is not challenging at these levels, and there is a progression of higher reaction lows over the last 3 months. The USA and Europe and Japan are all engaged in quantitative easing. China has been much more reticent about easing. They certainly haven't pulled on the same levers for stimulus that have really stoked growth over the course of the last 30 years. And then, of course, over the weekend, we had the largest bankruptcy of a corporate entity. This one is supposed to be government-backed so far, in the order of $30 billion. The big question is China now tackling a slowing economy? And is there anything they can do to reverse that? Or are they deliberately trying to slow the economy to unwind some of the excesses? Are they running counter-cyclical policy and preparing to unleash a round of stimulus to rescue growth and to purge the financial system of some of the leverage before that happens? Well, that would hopefully be what they're doing. There may also be a strategic element to that, and thinking that this is the time to try and go through this corrective phase while the rest of the world is stimulating, so that when the stimulus runs its course everywhere else, that China will be in a better competitive position, having gone through this reasonably painful period of fiscal consolidation or monetary consolidation. So there is obviously there are a lot of considerations to take into account. One thing that I think we can conclude, though, is that if the H-share index can sustain a move above 11,000, well, then we are back in a demand-dominated environment beyond the short term. Then when we think about the Shenzhen B shares, which I've been highlighting repeatedly, there is the potential here that it is going to be able to sustain a move back above the 900 point level, and it was closing above that level on Friday and improved upon that performance in here today. But there is still this sequence of lower rally highs. When we think about the property developers, the Shanghai Property Index is steadying from the 6,000 level and looks quite similar to a number of the other main indices. But a lot of these, the banks or the property developers, are quasi supported by the central government, whereas I think the Shenzhen B shares are more private companies. There is a lot to play for, obviously, because a number of high-profile investors have been saying that they think that China is a better prospect because of the valuation. But if they're not willing to stimulate, then that is a potentially something that is going to derail growth. But they are likely to benefit from a hiatus in the trade war, and the stock market does appear to be suggesting that there is potential for additional upside. I continue to think that China is more of a trader's market than an investor's market, but it is at least steadying in here. The Indian market is also really quiet at the moment in the region of its peak. It wasn't quite able to hold on to the initial advance in here today. The protests about the new immigration laws are obviously weighing on sentiment, but the other factors that have been announced over the last 3 weeks to support growth are probably more important in terms of the market. The one index that is underperforming quite clearly right now is Thailand, and there is an increasingly confident protest movement evolving there, and that does appear to be weighing on the stock market. The Thai baht has at least stopped appreciating, but it hasn't weakened meaningfully just yet, but I rather suspect that that is only a matter of time. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.